Welcome to Federal Insights Cyber Workforce Training, sponsored by Battelle. Now, here's your host, Tom Temin.
Industry and government both agree, without enough qualified people, America will stay at risk in the cybersecurity wars. For years, the National Initiative on Cybersecurity Education at the National Institute of Standards and Technology has been working this issue. Now, the Trump administration's recent executive order on cybersecurity has upped the ante for that initiative. Rodney Peterson is director of NICE, and he joins me now with more. Rodney, good to have you on.
Thank you, Tom. My pleasure.
So what is new, first of all, with the NICE program itself, the Initiative on Cybersecurity Education?
So NICE has been in existence for several years. I think we're clearly building momentum to promote and energize a robust and integrated ecosystem of cybersecurity education training and workforce development. So I think it's that momentum that both allows us to create a community across both the public and private sector, as well as our foundational resource, which is the NICE Cybersecurity Workforce Framework, which was published for the first time as a draft NIST Special Publication 800-181 last November. And after a comment period, we're expecting a final version to be released this summer. And that NICE Workforce Framework really provides a common way to think about cybersecurity work, a taxonomy, a reference tool that can really help align our diverse and complex community together towards a common vision.
I guess that would be useful because cybersecurity jobs range from looking at monitors and doing coding all the way to management of this whole thing from a CIO, CISO standpoint.
That's absolutely right. In fact, we often hear about the demand for cybersecurity work, and certainly technical roles and positions are a high priority. But the work to be done in cybersecurity is pretty broad and diverse. And our NICE Workforce Framework starts by talking about seven broad categories, then it drills down into 31 specialty areas. But it talks about 50 or more work roles that might be assumed across a public or private sector workforce. And we're starting to see the development of tools and other ways to align what education and training providers are doing, what employers are doing. And most notably, I would just point out that one of the things that NICE funded over this past year was a tool called CyberSeek. CyberSeek.org includes an interactive jobs heat map as well as the career pathway portal. And not only does it show the job demand across the U.S., you can drill down by state, by metropolitan area, and most importantly, it shows what the jobs are according to that NICE framework.
Now, the Trump administration's executive order on cybersecurity had a few short paragraphs, but I think important ones, on the need for workforce development. And so you have been given kind of the point person role in carrying that out. What does that require?
Yeah, that's right. The executive order entitled Strengthening the Cybersecurity of Federal Networks and Critical Infrastructure really has four overall deliverables. And the first talks about protecting federal networks, secondly, critical infrastructure, and third, international deterrence and cooperation. And as you described, cybersecurity workforce is really identified as the four key part of that. But the way it's really understood and explained is it's not last, it's first and most important because it's the foundation to make all those other things happen. We need that knowledgeable and skilled cybersecurity workforce in order that we can protect our federal networks and critical infrastructures. So it's really seen as a key enabler, a foundation for the rest of the executive order. And we're working hard with our partners, both in the federal government as well as in the private sector and academia, to make sure that we try to take this as an opportunity to once again elevate and raise awareness about the importance of cybersecurity workforce. The final thing I would say with respect to the executive order is I think for the first time it really elevates the cybersecurity workforce as a national security concern. Our partners in the White House and the National Security Council consistently make that point that we need a knowledgeable and skilled cybersecurity workforce in the interest of our national security.
We're speaking with Rodney Peterson, director of the National Institute for Cybersecurity Education at NIST. And so what particular new responsibilities, duties, activities does the NICE initiative have to undertake now as a result of the executive order?
Well, of course, the ongoing work continues, and we're working hard on continuing to implement our NICE strategic plan, which was actually required by Congress under the Cybersecurity Enhancement Act of 2014. So that strategic plan that was developed in 2015 continues to guide our programs and the work that we do. Over the summer, given the deadlines of the executive order to produce a report to the president in 120 days, we're quite frankly multitasking to do what the executive order asks of us. One is to assess the scope and sufficiency of efforts to develop the future workforce, and secondly, to come up with findings and recommendations about how to grow and sustain that cybersecurity workforce of the future. So the good news is that NICE already has a robust relationship with a lot of the interagency partners who we quickly rallied to join us in this effort. The Department of Homeland Security is also identified in the executive order as a co-lead, but there are many other departments and agencies that we partner with. But because the scope of the work is not just the federal government's workforce, but the nation's workforce, including the private sector, we're quickly moving to do outreach to both companies, academia, nonprofit organizations, and we'll do that principally through a request for information that will be released in a few days, and also a couple of public workshops where we're going to try to both share some of our preliminary learning and hopefully get feedback and input from the community.
And where will those take place?
The location and dates and times are still to be determined, but they will certainly be across the U.S. to both represent the diversity of our great country and also to involve as many voices as possible in the discussion.
But they will take place during the summer.
That's right, yeah. So our deadline to deliver this report to the president is September 8th, and that means that much of the work, as I said earlier, will happen over the course of June, July, and August. I would also add that there is more information on a website we created. It's nist.gov/nice/cybersecurityworkforce.
Rodney Peterson is director of the National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Hey, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Find a link to that website and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin. Cybersecurity training gets a lot of lip service. At the Homeland Security Department, they're sharing information and best practices not only on cyber, but on cyber training for 250,000 employees. Hemant Badwan is Director of Governance and Executive Management at DHS. He headed up the team resulting in the DHS Information Security Training Working Group. And he joins me now with how it works. Mr. Badwan, good to have you on.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Nice to be on there.
Tell us about the Information Security Training Working Group. Who's on it? What is it? And what does it do?
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm happy to. So the Information Security Training Working Group, it was created to provide a collaborative training and resource sharing platform to DHS components. And therefore, we are trying to unify the DHS cybersecurity awareness and cybersecurity training efforts and adhering to our DHS unity of effort.
And what types of training does it offer? Is it all online training for employees?
So we have currently right now DHS employees are spread throughout the globe. So our main focus with the training is to provide the training in an efficient manner, you know, regardless of their physical location. So our mandatory trainings that that we have currently in DHS, we use online platform for delivery.
And what sorts of topics are in there?
We have a few different topics. We mostly focus on general cybersecurity awareness training, but we also focus on social engineering and role-based training. And then the components, DHS components, they add specific training that are specific to their mission. So, for example, the law enforcement piece, they add their piece to the general security training if needed.
So when you say social engineering, in other words, training people to be on guard against phishing attacks and that kind of thing?
Yes, that's correct.
And who develops the training? How does that happen?
So currently the training is developed by the component lead. What we do at DHS headquarters here as part of the working group is we provide the guidance and policy related to what we determine to be part of the training. And then each component in DHS, they take that and then they build the training for social engineering as needed to and include, you know, certain mission critical and their mission need items in there.
And a lot of organizations have made annual or some sort of periodic cyber training mandatory. Is that the case for Homeland Security?
Correct. Yes, our policy states that upon arrival, every DHS employee must take the training within 24 hours of onboarding. Also, each DHS employee, which, you know, whether it's a contractor or a federal staff, is required to take general cybersecurity awareness training every year. And then we also have other mandatory role-based trainings, and you know, we talked about social engineering. But the goal, what we try to do is our general cybersecurity awareness training, we try to provide the guidance so the components can link the social engineering and other trainings as part of that cybersecurity awareness training that's required. And
we're speaking with Hemant Badwan. He's Director of Governance and Executive Management at the Homeland Security Department. Do you have much contact and interaction with the Homeland Security cybersecurity components themselves? They're concerned with other issues than internal training, but they certainly know the cybersecurity threats and so forth that are current.
Yeah, so the main goal for the working group was to kind of create that collaboration space for all the components. So by creating that, we have leads from each component that are participating in the working group. We are using that platform to get feedback from those leads, and then the leads in turn, they're working with the cybersecurity offices within each component to get that data. So we kind of better understand, you know, besides just internal training, you know, what are some of the threats, what are some of the risks that we need to focus on when we are developing the training.
Would you say that the training then is probably as good as anything available anywhere for cybersecurity and to deploy it to large numbers of people?
Yes, I would say so. And again, you know, we look at we have several, you know, subject matter experts that are part of the working group, and the components that are part of the working group. They stay ahead of, you know, what's coming. We are actually, you know, integrated very well within the other components and other working groups and teams that are out there in DHS to kind of stay ahead, step ahead. But the training, as far as, you know, as I mentioned before, each component have their mission needs, and they may have like law enforcement side. So they may have something that they want to push out to their folks that they focus on. So I believe it, you know, the training that the components are providing is, you know, par with what's out there.
The reason I ask is this seems like a good opportunity for some kind of government-wide deployment as almost a shared service. Has that come up?
Yeah, so and that's what we are actually working towards. That was one of the working group goals to work towards, and we kicked that off this year, is to be able to create some sort of a global or DHS-wide mechanism for providing this training to all the users. Now, our goal is for this part of the working group, we are working towards that, where it would be, for example, one training for awareness, and then the components will be able to take that and they will be able to use that and add their other pieces to it as needed. But we are working towards, and the working group members are extremely helpful with that, because we are able to get the information that that they have and collaboratively put together the training that would work for everyone. Because there will be topics, you know, general topics of cybersecurity awareness or social engineering that applies to everyone. And you're right. So the goal is that we are rather heading down the path of a more DHS-wide platform for that.
But I would think the Justice Department might be a good customer. They've got lots of law enforcement and similar cybersecurity topics, and they could avoid reinventing the wheel.
You're correct. And we do actually, as part of our NCPD component, we do work with other agencies, rather, to, you know, understand, get their lessons learned and see what they have as well. So the working group is definitely looking into that as well.
And what other types of training does the Executive Business Management Branch develop?
Basically, this is a cybersecurity, security awareness is the main focus right now. So that's been our target, and we are trying to make sure that we are able to provide that and improve it further before we look into other training.
Hemant Badwan is Director of Governance and Executive Management at the Homeland Security Department. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll post a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin. Whether you're a federal agency or a contractor, cybersecurity has become too important to leave solely to the tech staff. The worst threat these days seems to be the insider threat. Joining me with advice for how to take a corporate approach, Evan Wolf and Addie Cliff. They are partners at the law firm Kroll Mooring. Good to have you both on.
Good to join you today.
Great to be here.
You have special considerations for federal contractors as they try to mitigate their own insider threats. What are some of the special considerations they have that maybe other companies don't have?
There's really two areas that federal contractors need to be thinking about insider threat mitigation. The first is the role role they can play as a business. And this is the good news for the insider threat requirements for companies these days, which is this can be a growth area for them, both as they implement these programs for federal agencies, which also have to worry about insider threat and threat mitigation, but also for defense companies that have to be implementing this. Not everyone is going to be able to build their own technology and or governance structure, and so they're going to turn to other government contractors and other consultants to help build this. And that's where I think there's going to be a lot of growth. That's the first area of providing these services. And the second is going to be implementing their own programs. And there's going to be a clear role and a set of requirements and a new set of activities, which will require everything from increasing hiring to implementing new tech solutions to meet these new requirements.
Part of this is driven by the fact that they often hold government information in their own systems and servers, and their special requirements by the government for holding that information, correct?
There are a set of requirements, but also it's driving types of services that companies must have. For example, they must be implementing new technical controls. So there's a set of software and or other technology companies that are trying to address this by not only developing these packages and these programs, but also helping companies implement them. And that's where we're seeing both the drive in the technology companies and also drive in the services companies, because the aspects of this require both monitoring, which is a silicon problem in that you have to monitor computers, and a carbon problem in that you actually have to be able to watch people and have the right governance structure and administrative controls.
And Addie?
As Evan said, there's a lot of these different requirements. I mean, specific to contractors who have facility clearances, so those contractors that are either safeguarding classified information or accessing classified information in particular, there are some big changes there. So a little over a year ago, the Defense Security Service, DSS, amended the NISPOM, that's an amendment we refer to as Change 2, to require contractors with facility clearance to create a formal plan to implement an insider threat program. So I think particularly for those cleared contractors, this is a hot topic. Those plans had to be in place by November of 2016, so we have almost a year sort of under our belts with the plans in place, and now contractors are really digging into the implementation phase of those programs. When it amended the NISPOM, DSS imposed some basic minimum requirements for those contractors related to insider threat programs. A lot of those requirements already existed, right? So you already had to be reporting and monitoring insider threats. The change is that now all those various aspects are part of a comprehensive and formal program, right? So you have to designate someone who's in
sure.
charge of it. You have to give training to all your cleared employees. You have to make sure, and this is really in Evan's wheelhouse, you have to make sure that you have the appropriate controls in place on your systems. And this is all subject to oversight by DSS. So my sense was that when this was rolled out last year, DSS itself probably didn't know what best practices would look like. And it's now working with industry as it's approving, monitoring these programs to get a better sense of, okay, what should these contractors be doing to you know, really be doing a good job in this arena?
And just so people understand, by NISPOM, we were referring to the National Industrial Security Program Operating Manual. We're speaking with Evan Wolf and Addie Cliff of the law firm Kroll Mooring. Something else you've written, which is interesting, is that the existence of the right controls and the right reporting mechanisms are becoming a factor in mergers and acquisitions in the defense contracting industry. True?
That's right. I would say that cybersecurity and insider threats are becoming more and more significant in M&A. In my view, there's sort of two different buckets we think about when we're talking about M&A and cybersecurity. So first, there's the government contracts and regulatory requirements that apply when the target is in the government contract space. So those types of, you know, regulatory requirements that attach to government contracting, particularly where the targets involved in DOD or Intel community type of contracting. The second is cybersecurity as a consideration just in run-of-the-mill commercial acquisitions, right? So sort of taking the first bucket, which is an area that I do a lot of work in, you know, we'll be looking at general compliance considerations, and buyers are focusing a lot more on compliance with the DFARS safeguarding rule, FedRAMP certification, those types of requirements. Another context that comes up a lot is when the parties are submitting a notice to the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. So CFIUS, that's an interagency committee, and it has authority to review transactions that are going to result in control of a U.S. business by a foreign person. One one of the required submissions, and this has been the case for a while as part of that notice, is a copy of what will be the applicable cybersecurity plan post-acquisition, right? And it's increasingly important. We're seeing this more and more, that the parties really demonstrate to the committee that they have adequate controls in place so that there is an assurance that post-closing that foreign person is not going to be able to utilize, to exploit any of the information that the U.S. company has. So I would say it's really important for companies to be thinking about this in the early stages of acquisition, particularly where you are in this sort of DoD, Intel community type of space.
Well, Evan, I wanted to ask you about the issue, too, and this relates to this, is that, as we said in the beginning, this is not just an issue for the cyber tech staff anymore. It's really a corporate governance and leadership topic.
Absolutely. And this is where we've seen a very clear trend in all transactions where cyber and privacy are oftentimes driving a merger or an acquisition or receiving funding because companies really care about and want to evaluate whether or not there's been a loss of IP, a compromised system. And really, since the big issue for mergers these days is going to be what happens after the merger when you have to integrate two technology systems or you have to bring together a set of IT staff. Does everyone have the same training? Is there a training program that exists? And so the insider threat has just exacerbated these concerns in many ways in that this is another area that companies are evaluating during these mergers and acquisitions or market moments where they want to know that has a company been considering this, been thoughtful about it, been proactive about it? And ultimately, the question that comes up in all the transactions we handle is, have there been any previous incidents? And if so, have they been handled appropriately? As Addie talked about, there's a very significant reporting requirement. Have you been implementing the controls of the NISPOM? Have you met the deadlines that were required of you? These are questions that a few years ago were thought about during transactions or maybe brought up afterwards when you were beginning the system, the post-merger system integration. But now they're really sometimes, and as we've seen with some of the higher profile transactions that have actually been significantly altered by data breaches, this is coming up beforehand. And that's why, to your question, really, this has become a C-suite question. IT is no longer left to guys with black shirts and tats, but really, this has become something that's managed at the C-suite, and it's really, as we call it, a team sport.
Evan Wolf and Addie Cliff are partners at the law firm Kroll Mooring. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
We'll post a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights Cyber Workforce Training, sponsored by Battelle on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Cyber Training.